morning, everyone. Welcome to the first Health Sciences Education Rounds for this academic year. My name is Sheila Pidgeon, and I'm an education developer with the School of Medicine. And I'm here to welcome you on behalf of Dr. Leslie Flynn, who is unable to be here today. She has a commitment with the Royal College. The other extremely pleasurable duty she's given me is to introduce our featured presenter for today, Professor Laurie Gebke-Kerr. Laurie is the recipient of the Faculty of Health Sciences Education Award this past spring, our most prestigious honor given to teachers in this faculty. Laurie is a teacher in the School of Nursing, currently focusing mostly on third-year nursing, and she's going to talk to us today about teaching and innovation. I wanted to read a little bit of what was said about Laurie, embarrassing her to no end, I'm sure, when the award was presented at the Black Tie this year. Certain teachers and clinical educators leave an indelible mark on students, and Laurie Gebke-Kerr is one of those people. Her students and colleagues have praised her teaching style as she creates a positive learning environment that pushes students to further their learning to become outstanding clinicians. But beyond the classroom and the clinic, Laurie has influenced pedagogy in the School of Nursing by exploring new ways to develop high-fidelity simulation and clinical teaching scenarios in her courses. Furthermore, she actively recruits and mentors nurses to become clinical teachers in the school. She is a consistent source of support to clinical teachers and their students, setting the bar to excellence always. When I looked up effective teaching last night as I was preparing for today, I saw the word excellence, and I thought it's very fitting that Laurie is here today to talk to us about effective teaching. Laurie. Thank you, Sheila. I'm just going to hand it one more clicker here.
Is everybody comfortable? I don't think I missed anything.
That was a very kind introduction, but I'm not sure that I feel like I can live up to the presentation. I was saying to the girls when we were talking this morning that, you know, put me in front of students and I still get butterflies. Put me in front of colleagues and I'm nervous beyond belief. So I hope that you'll bear with me today just with the nervousness that I do feel. One of the things that I wanted to take you through is sort of some of the things that I have found within my short time here at Queen's, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about myself, and related to that term effective teaching and whether there actually is such a thing. And I think it is truly subjective, and certainly as we go through the course of this morning, within the next hour, that, you know, we may come to some answers about certain things, but perhaps not other answers about other things. But together, we can certainly have the discussion about effective teaching. One of the things that I personally like to do before I start is always to get to know my learners, and that's one thing I also talk about. So I don't want to spend a huge amount of time on it because I do want to try and get through the presentation, but I would just like to just quickly go through, if you could tell me what your name is and where you're from within the Faculty of Health Sciences. So why don't we start in the back?
Joy Me.
Thank you. Yes, Marianne, you still have to do it.
Marianne Lechner from the School of Nursing, and I'm a PhD student from the School of
Nursing. I'm Kevin Wim from the School of Nursing.
Susie Savvy Young, currently an educational developer and assessment and evaluation consultant with the undergraduate
program. Hi, Eleni Katsoulis. I'm actually taking over for Sue's position with undergraduate medical education.
Okay. Sheila Finchin, undergraduate meds.
Jenny.
Jen
Zimansky,
Liz Vandenberg, Boxville Nursing and Jim Bosiowski, new staff general journalist. Eric Cross.
Charlotte Gray.
I'm Cynthia Phillips. I'm with professional education and practice at KGH.
Olivia Alexander, a research assistant in the office.
Bridget Sandy, educational developer in Worcester.
No, Carolyn Scott Lee from the Office of Health Sciences Education. Thank you and welcome, everyone. So one of the things that I have learned that I'm going to talk about in a little bit more detail is always any good presentation has objectives that we hope to achieve by the end of it.
And so the objectives that I've outlined for our time together here this morning is that I'm hoping by the end of this that you're going to be able to identify the three main aspects of my teaching philosophy that I discuss with you, describe at least two of the four innovations in teaching that I am going to talk about, and two of the three methods of evidence-informed teaching. So to start off with, everybody has a clicker, and at the beginning, anytime I use clickers, I always like just to get out of the way, is everybody's clicker working? If we have had some issues with some of the batteries, so if you find your clicker, it will only take your answer once. And if you find that perhaps you don't think it's working, you can do go 41 go and then try your answer again. Otherwise, just let me know and I can get you a new clicker.
Awesome.
So go 41 go if you don't think that's just the radio frequency that it works on, and then you can go ahead and answer. Anybody think that theirs is not? It should actually
light.
Go green when you press it. You should be able to see a light that lights up on the actual clicker when you press it. So there's always sometimes a crazy person who likes to click. That happens also within my classroom setting. Somebody likes to be the funny. So I wanted to start off with who am I in particular. So I know some of you know me, and I appreciate my nursing colleagues coming to support me today on this, making me even more nervous than what I'm doing. But to start out, just to give you just a little bit brief, is that I am a Queen's grad, both in my undergrad and the graduate program. So way back in 1993, I graduated with my Bachelor of Nursing Science here from Queen's. I'm not originally from this area, but things worked out from an employment perspective, and I have now stayed and very much feel that it is home. After 93, I took the critical care course, which I think the majority of people like to take, in 1995. I went on to achieve my certification in oncology nursing and have maintained that in 1997. And then I achieved my master's of science very happily after having two children during the time of doing my master's in 2004. So that just gives you just a little bit from my education perspective. From a nursing career perspective, excuse me, I started out at Kingston General Hospital working on Kid 6 at that time was a medical oncology nephrology floor. Oncology, as you can see from my certification, is where I kind of steered my practice and certainly was my first true love. And from that time at KGH, I assumed different roles such as a staff nurse on that Kid 6 unit, as well as I began as an asthma nurse educator. And that was kind of my first, besides educating patients, to actually start from an innovation perspective of developing a new program. And that was a new program in which I worked with Diane Lougheed on for a period of time before actually I then decided to change routes and got a position with the Kingston Regional Cancer Center at that time as a medical oncology staff nurse. So I was really wanted to follow into my oncology focus and where I felt certainly most comfortable and did more education at that point in time, certainly more from a patient perspective. We did a lot around the chemotherapy that they were receiving, the treatments overall, the medications that they were taking as we were administering chemotherapy to them during that time frame. During the time that I was at the cancer center as well, I also acted within a study nurse position. So I got my first little foot into doing some research within that setting as well. From that standpoint, I then had an opportunity that presented to me to come back as the clinical instructor back on the medical oncology floor that I was first on. So I then decided to leave the Regional Cancer Center, we were not joined at that time, and hopped on back to KGH, where I was the clinical instructor for about 2 years within that oncology floor, and certainly loved it. So some of you may know, as a clinical educator position, you're responsible for educating new hires that would come through the floor. You're responsible for the policy and procedures that would relate directly to that particular service that you were looking for. Certainly helping with added nursing skills, maintaining certifications, those types of things as well in a nutshell. And I loved that position. Was thoroughly happy, was not looking for anything else, but what came up at that point in time was there was then a position that was posted for a new program that was coming up, which was in pediatric oncology. And in the fall of 1999, the Pediatric Oncology Group of Ontario actually gave out new money in order to support a new program that was going to be put at the five main centres within Ontario. And so one of the positions that came from that was the coordinator for this pediatric oncology program. Now, at that point in time, all of my nursing had been adult. And as I said, I wasn't looking for a change, but the position certainly interests me. So I took the dive, and I was successful for the position. And it was an interesting position because, of course, nothing was set up for that position in particular before I went into it. So I almost was able to develop the role based on the needs of what was in the program. And what that position ended up being is that myself as a coordinator oversaw the care of the patients, pediatric oncology patients and their families, whether they were within a hospital setting, a clinical setting, such as that, or even in the community, or if they had to go, say, up to SickKids for a bone marrow transplant, or sometimes we sent them for CHEO for radiation that we weren't able to do here. And so I oversaw their care within wherever they were, ensuring that all that continuity and that the needs of the patients were being met. The other part that it involved was a lot of patient and family education. So, of course, depending on the age of the child would depend on how much we involved the child in the education of what was happening. But certainly that support and that information needs, emotional needs. And this is actually what I ended up doing my master's thesis on, was the supportive care needs of parents of children with cancer at the time of diagnosis, which proved to be very interesting because then I could then go back and actually directly affect the program that I was working in. So very much loved it, still in it from an education standpoint, just again switching roles and going back into the patients at that particular time. And then again, not looking for anything, another opportunity presented to itself by a dear colleague of mine, Cheryl Pulling, who approached me about would I be interested in then pursuing that pediatric portion that I was doing from a teaching perspective within the School of Nursing at Queen's University. Cheryl was one of my clinical teachers when I did my undergrad, and she and I had maintained contact by attending the same church together, so she always knew what I was up to and what things were going on in my life. And it has led me to where I am today. So in 2005, when I was pregnant with my third child, I started a new position of becoming a lecturer within the School of Nursing. And I have stayed, and I plan to stay. Again, not looking for anything different, truly loving what I'm doing, but that's a bit about my history, where I've been, and what has happened with me. So to continue on with more of my teaching at Queen's, to get down into sort of that nitty-gritty of where I've been and where I've really found myself related to this effective teaching that I want to speak about today, is that within nursing, I teach both in the clinical and the theoretical courses. So I take students within to the pediatric unit, right, and basically teach them how to be a pediatric nurse and what they need to watch for, what they need to look for with all the patients, the variety of patients that we care for. And then within a theory component, I teach them also their pediatric theory within a classroom setting such as this. Our course is offered twice, so we have a group of students who take it from September until December, and then we switch, and the other half of the students then come in within January to April. And while they're not in pediatrics or maternal child, which is what the whole course is entitled, they're in med-surg and psych as their other part of the rotation, and then we switch them is what we do. In my time here at Queen's, I have taught in second, third, and fourth year courses. I've really found my niche within the third year of the program related to sort of my expertise that I've come to know within the pediatric oncology program, and really feel that if I'm to be an effective teacher, that I'm certainly in my element with where I am within the third year. I certainly enjoyed second and fourth year. It's always something new to broaden and to expand, but certainly am happy within the third year of the program. So our course is entitled Family-Centered Nursing, which will encompass both the clinical and the theoretical aspects of obstetrical nursing, pediatric nursing, and family nursing as well. And that's the course that I'm going to tell you about things that I have done. So to break it up, we all, most of us know, and one thing that I learned from my wonderful TIPS course that I took, is that after about 10 minutes, I'm going to start to lose you. So there has to be a way that I'm going to bring you back and keep you engaged in what it is that I'm speaking about. Clickers is something I'm going to talk about later within my presentation. I love clickers. My students love clickers. The feedback I have always received about clickers has been that they are the best, because I do insert, even if it's just one clicker question, in after a 10-minute period. It wakes people up. It gets them fidgeting around in their chair because they have to actually grab the clicker and now pay attention. Oh my goodness, am I going to actually answer the question? So my test for you guys, and obviously I have no idea who gets it right and who gets it wrong, which is another thing that the students like. They're not centered out. They don't have to raise their hand, which has been the feedback that I've received. Based on what I've talked about, the highest level of education that I have is a Bachelor of Nursing Science degree. Is that true or false? So you can go ahead and answer, obviously, one for true and two for false. Oh, and 88% of you got that correct. So no, my highest, and I would then say to them, what is my highest level of education? And they all like to say it in unison. They would all say Master of Science. I won't make you guys do that. But we use it as a teaching opportunity. So I know that came back, and I actually just last week taught two weeks ago taught cardiac related to pediatrics. And in my assessment of my next lecture, I always do a review of the previous week's material. And one of the things that happened is that we were talking about the classification of cardiac defects. And one that I had put up there came across split between all four of them. So what I could take away from that was based on the fact, number one, they haven't reviewed their notes, perhaps, but also the teaching that I did related to that still isn't 100% clear. So then I'm able to go back and we pulled it. Again, go back to that lecture. We pulled it and reviewed those classifications again so that I was more certainly wanted to be relieved or ensured that they had understood the concepts that we were speaking about at that time. So they'd love to be able to see those results, and we are going to talk about them more. And there's another one. In what year did I begin my career at Queen's University? Was it 95, 99, 2002, 2005, 2009, or 2012? Aren't these fun? And I don't know if you can see, but I can actually, there's responses up there. So knowing how many people are in class, you can see how many people are actually participating and responding. And then your polling closes, and then it comes back from there. So I actually began my university career in 2005. So those who answered number four, 31% of you were correct. So my teaching philosophy, of course, before I came to Queen's with all my positions at KGH, I didn't need to have a teaching philosophy, right? When I came into academia and trying to figure that out, it really made me stop and think, what is it about my teaching and relating to the students that I want to come away with? And so what I came and what I determined is that I believed my role at Queen's was to try and facilitate understanding so that students are able to achieve their goals that they have set in their education as undergraduate nurses. And one of the ways that I'd like to do this is by engaging them into deeper learning. Because if I can engage them into deeper learning, then I actually feel that they're going to commit themselves to that type of learning and will devote the energy to learning that is relevant to them and their goals. So I try to characterize, I try to capture the learner's attention by creating an environment in which we can engage in deeper learning. And I do that both within the theoretical and within my clinical setting as well. So to try and engage them in deeper learning, there were three aspects in particular that I try to focus on. Active learning is the first of them. Within nursing, I'm sure a lot of you know that active learning is one of the ways in which all of us work quite well. So I believe in a connection between teaching and learning in which the students themselves are actively involved in the situation to learn most effectively. So if I do that within the theoretical setting, that could be by introducing case studies, something that has happened within the clinical setting. Thank you. Something that has happened within the clinical setting during that time that we can then bring back to the classroom and everyone can learn about. And our students in particular, the ones that I have worked with, love that concept because they love being able to relate it to directly something that they could have been involved with within that clinical setting. So I feel that the learning situations need to encompass thought-provoking questions in order to encourage students to reflect on the meaning of their content, information, attitude, values, beliefs, and skills. So I try to encourage thoughtful reflection and then promote independent thinking. So to give you an idea of that, What I try to do, and I do it very much in the clinical setting, I will also do it in the theory setting as well, depending on my time limit in particular. But in the clinical setting, when a question is asked to me, I just don't automatically answer it for the student. So we talk about it. I may provide a thought-provoking question back to them. I may just turn it right around and ask them, what do they think? And a lot of them have the tools that are in there in order to participate in their own active learning, and I'm going to talk about critically thinking, and critically think through the situation. They just honestly don't believe in themselves, and they're scared to actually do it. So by having them actually participate in it over time, that's one of the comments that I've received back, is by having them actively learn through that situation, they realize that they can do it. And it's as simple as just turning a question around and asking them what they think. And if they get it wrong, we tell them we're in a safe learning environment here. We don't make fun, we don't laugh, we don't do any of those things. We talk about how what they thought of may be applicable more to a different situation and then steer them back to where it is that they need to go. And over time, I see improvements within students who aren't able to get it right off the bat related to that active learning for sure. So I use frequent questions within the classroom through the clicker aspect, also through just general questions as we're talking about things within the lecture. And then I try to select teaching or learning strategies that involve the students. And some of the things that you're going to participate in, clickers. We also have a game of Jeopardy that we're going to try and play at the end. Again, it's all ways that students can then reflect and bring that learning back. Another one that I have is Name That Communicable Disease. So within pediatrics, we have communicable diseases. So we teach the theory, and then we play the game Name That Communicable Disease. And lots of multiple choice and true and false quizzes that go along. So you can see clickers is truly my main utilization. Jeopardy certainly plays a big portion. And then the active learning that I do with the questions and just keeping the discussion open and very applicable to every student, try to, very applicable to the students that are within the room as well. When I look at critical thinking, within the Faculty of Health Sciences, we all know how important critical thinking is. And I find if a student has difficulty in a particular area or the student hasn't been successful within, and I'll speak specifically to my pediatric portion, to the pediatric clinical or the theory aspect, I find that they're just not able to use their critically thinking to that deeper level to be able to help them to succeed. So one of my challenges has been is how can I help with that critically thinking? Because it is the main area identified for our students. And so I try to, again, organize my classroom and the clinical settings with relevant issues that relate to pediatric nurses that encourages students to actively participate in the examination of various situations. Again, not giving them the answer, but how can we talk it through? One of the things that we do, for example, in post-conference, we just don't talk about our day. We have scenarios. So I pick scenarios of something may have happened in the last clinical rotation, so not necessarily affecting this current clinical group. But if we had this scenario present to us, what is it that we think that we might need to do? Critically thinking, what's our number one area for assessment? Is it a temperature? Is it a respiratory assessment? And having them focus from a critically thinking perspective. And we do a lot of that within our post-conference, and again, they love it, because they're then able to work through and hear what other students would say and then learn from each other as well. I personally like to get to know the students that I teach because, as we know, everyone learns differently. Some students like to observe something first. I'm not a fan of observation, I have to be honest. So when someone tells me, I like to watch you do that first, I do have difficulty with that because I know that if I just get them in there and get them to do it, they're going to walk away with more than if they watch me do it first. So I bargain with them, and I say, okay, I'm going to go through every single step that we're going to do, but when we go in, and I'll be right there with you the whole time, I'm going to have you do it, and I'll still walk you through those steps. And then they come out, and usually they thank me. There is the odd student who's just like, I just wish you would have let me observe, and then I'll go back and let them observe the next time if I feel that that certainly is appropriate. And it depends on the skill that we're speaking of. I'm not going to put a student into a situation, of course, that they're not comfortable with, that they haven't had the research on prior to entering into that skill. But I do like to push them certainly a little bit. So again, getting to know our students to gain the clarity in their thought process and the process by which they learn is certainly important. What is going to work well for them? So again, various learning experience will enable these students to develop their skills, values, and belief, and that will allow them to assist in other various situations. And really within the clinical setting, what I see a lot of is that those students who I've pushed are helping the other students by the end of that clinical setting. And they're so proud of themselves that they want to share that knowledge, and they want to share how they've been able to then critically think by helping other people. So as their teacher, I try to encourage them to actively participate in their clients' care to strengthen the relationship with healthcare professionals and the healthcare system as well, through their critical thinking and the knowledge of the situation. And in hope, I certainly hope that the students are able to see that critically thinking skills and questioning are certainly respected and valued by the variety of members within our healthcare system. When I look at student interactions, that was my third point in particular related to my teaching philosophy that was important to me. And again, I believe very much that we learn from each other. Students learn from me and the situations that I've been in as a clinical teacher, applying them both within the theory setting and within the clinical setting, but they also learn from interactions with each other. And they very much do love to talk about what has happened to them, whether we're in the theory or in that actual clinical setting. The other thing that I try to do is I try to be readily available and accessible to the students registered within the course. So a lot of them obviously love to email, and I do tell them I will respond to their emails as quickly as possible. I am guilty. I do it on weekends. I'm closely connected to my email. That's one of the things that I love to do. But we do connect quite openly from an email system related to questions they might have prior to a midterm, questions that they have prior to clinical. They weren't able to find a weight. Now they can't calculate their safe dosages for the medications that they're receiving, those types of things. If they're having difficulty, I tell them my door is always open. We have had, unfortunately, some cases whereby nurses that they've been working with haven't treated them with the utmost respect as students should be treated with in a no-tolerance work environment. And we've worked through how can we meet, how can we change those things, and with guidance, of course, from my director, as well as looking to how we can solve these issues. Together we try to work to see how we can make things better for students as well. So in addition to promoting deep learning, I also feel that many of our learners come to Queen's with valuable experiences that enrich and add new meaning to their learning experience. These kids are smart. They have had things happen to them within their lives that directly can relate and bring purpose to what it is that we are speaking about. A lot of them, and we do joke, because some of them are 19, just turning 20, and of course, as you know, in pediatrics, we take up to 18, right? So when you think about it, there's like 1 year difference between the time that they actually could be on a pediatric unit and now they're sitting in here and going to be caring for those people. They do have things that they can bring to the table that very much relate to that pediatric population as well. And they still love to do that. They have lots of diverse backgrounds, beliefs and values, cultural differences. That's a huge thing that we're seeing nowadays within nursing. Students learn so much, and we just had it happen this week. With the culture that we were speaking about related to something that happened within clinical, and we had a student who was of that cultural background and explained to us why it was that way. And that was hugely beneficial for all of us, that we could learn from each other within that environment. So many things that we can do as well. So they start to gain their confidence, not only as learners, but certainly as critical thinkers. And so as my role, I try to know my students and know how they need to learn. I'm not perfect by any means, but I do try to make that one of the important things that I do. And I just want to be involved in ensuring students feel supported in learning situations and then encouraging them to higher levels, certainly of success. I don't want them to feel that they're out there alone and that things are very, very scary, because certainly they can be. All of a sudden you're dealing with these children who are very little babies, maybe have never changed a diaper, I've never actually held a baby before. So having them feel supported within that environment, that I know that they can do it, and we just work through it together. So some of the evidence-informed teaching, when we talk about, you know, effective teaching, is there such a thing? The main thing that has truly helped me, because as you know from my history, I didn't come into this with any educational experience per se. Yes, I had done education of families. Yes, I had done education of nurses, but I didn't have any formal training in particular. And if there's one thing in particular that I want to hone in on, it is that TIPS program. And Sheila was there, and I thank Sheila for that. And I don't know, do any of you familiar with the TIPS program or have taken the TIPS program? So it actually stands for Teaching Improvement Process. And for me, I took it in 2007. So when I came, I had my baby, I had a short maternity leave, I came back in September of 2006, and in the spring of 2007, I took the TIPS program. And that, for me, was solidifying and helping me know, as an educator, what my responsibilities are, what is it that I could do, how could I improve and make things better. And the things that I was able to learn within the TIPS program certainly I feel have been my solid foundation, I think, for the success that I have felt throughout my short career here at Queen's. So we know that TIPS has actually been found to be effective in utilizing resources that work well in small and large groups. That was totally me. I have a small group within my clinical setting. I have a larger group, maybe not as large as some of you might teach to, but I have a larger group as well. And how can I relate to them within those environments? Specifically, the tools that I learned within this workshop now guide my teaching. So every lecture has the objectives. And I tell the students, those objectives are important. You need to review them. They're guiding where it is within our lecture that I want to focus things as well. And they need to be measurable. They also, TIPS had helped me to plan and organize my presentation for my setting. Prior to taking TIPS, I felt that I had the information in there, but how it was organized and how I was delivering it to the students was not as effective as what it is now. Because I know related to my objectives, how my outcomes should actually be, right? Some of the feedback that I'm hopefully going to receive from the students related to that it was effective in how they were organized and how we talked about things. And TIPS has certainly helped me to organize that. To also apply a variety of techniques within my presentations. As you can see, clickers is a big one. I'm going to talk about it a little bit more. But again, changing things up a little bit. The audiovisual aids, certainly more effectively. I have short video clips that I use as well, making sure that they're relevant. I don't like to do long video clips because I find that I lose them, but to really hone in on a message, I have one in particular that's my favorite about children with chronic illnesses, and in particular, it's a Down syndrome family. And the message that that delivers, it makes me cry every single time I watch it, even though it's a 3-minute video clip, but it hones in and drills, reinforces the message that I have just delivered about Down syndrome and chronic illness families as well. So the TIPS process certainly has greatly impacted, I feel, my abilities to effectively engage my audience, and therefore allowing that process of active learning, critical thinking, and student interactions as well within the students that I teach. The implementation of clickers has been another huge turning point for me in particular. Certainly, in the TIPS program, clickers were identified to me in support of my director as well. We have clickers that are for our nursing, the School of Nursing. So I have direct access to these because not all students are able to purchase clickers. And certainly, if they don't have a clicker, then they can't actively participate. So with support of our director, we were able to get those clickers in order to provide this environment. There's not a lecture I do that don't have clicker questions in them. But one of the feedback that the students love is that I review the topic from the week before. So again, looking at between 8 to 10 questions on what we reviewed last week to let's see how well we remember what it is that we've reviewed. That has been a huge feedback that I've received. And then breaking things up with clicker questions throughout. Whether they're true, false, whether they're multiple choice, certainly just depends on what it is that I'm teaching about. But clickers have certainly been accepted by students. They enjoy the challenge of critically thinking into deeper learning and the discussion it generates afterwards, right? If it comes up 100%, I feel great. We praise each other, right? We still praise each other when it doesn't come up 100%, but it engages us into a discussion. Okay, what have we missed? What's the point in that particular situation or topic that we missed on? So the feedback from the students directly through the USAT certainly reinforces the use of this tool. And if there's one thing I can certainly, my advice is take the TIPS program, and clickers are amazing. The implementation of case studies and interactive games. So the interactive games, the one that I mainly use is Jeopardy, and it's a pediatric Jeopardy whereby, again, depending on the topics that have been covered within that day, we divide up into groups. And together they work in order to formulate an answer. And you'll see how I do that just at the end of the presentation. Case studies related to nursing are huge. They certainly, within the clinical and the theoretical setting, reinforce again the information that we're speaking about. So again, depending on the topic it is that we're speaking about, someone may have cared for a child. I know they've cared for a child that week within clinical. I call upon them. They share their experience. People have questions that are directed back to the students or the other clinical group that I don't directly teach, but my colleague does. They've cared for that patient too, and they have something else to add in. So case studies within our theoretical and within the clinical settings are also very effective ways that I have found that students certainly love to be able to participate and solidify the knowledge that we're speaking of. So that was over my 10 minutes, so that's not good from my standpoint. So I'm going to bring you all back. I'm going to wake you all back up again, and I'm going to engage you in another clicker question. So to engage students into deeper learning, which strategies is it that I use? So you can see that you can make your questions more complicated. So active learning, passive learning, critical thinking, skills assessment, student interaction, staff interaction. Then I'm looking, okay, is the answer 1, 3, or 5, 2, 4, or 5, 1, 3, or 6, or is it just one of those listed from 1 till 6? So you can make clicker questions with students as difficult or as easy as you want them to be to reinforce that information. How deep do you want them to critically think based on the information that you're actually giving to them at that particular time? Excellent job. So 78, I think it says, percent of you are absolutely correct. So active learning, critical thinking, and student interaction are the three aspects that I identified. Great job. So looking in the innovation of teaching, what have I done with some of this? So the information that I've been able to receive, the student feedback that I've been able to bring back, is I've been involved in a few things within the School of Nursing. One of the things that we found extremely difficult was the continuity of information students were getting at the beginning of their clinical rotations. So to give you an example, I'm not the only instructor who teaches within pediatrics. There are actually three of us right now. And what we want to ensure is that all of the students are receiving the same information. And in order to develop that, what we felt that would actually be of benefit would be the development of orientation manuals. So not only from a staff perspective, but from a student perspective, we could come together and know that the information that we were giving the students was consistent. The students wouldn't go back and say, hey, you learned more about this than we did. We didn't end up being able to discuss some of this. How did you guys get that information? And we had some of that happening. So we developed, and I led the development of orientation manuals along with my team, certainly having direct input, specifically for maternal child. And if those of you who have worked in maternal child before are familiar with it, you'll know the charting in particular is completely 100% different than the rest of the hospital. And that's a huge learning curve for students because we expect them to know that right up front. And so there's a lot of upfront learning that we needed students to do. So what we can do now is we can post these orientation manuals onto Sonnet, which is like the med tech for the School of Nursing. And what we can do is that we can provide that to the students prior to them coming into the clinical setting. And we give them an outline, okay, this is what you need to review. This is extremely important within the documentation, for example. This is, you need to go through that orientation manual and be familiar because we're going to review it in detail on day one of orientation. So it again has solidified, really brought the knowledge together, and allowed us to more effectively teach within a short amount of time on that orientation day the information that we want the students to be able to achieve. So that was actually a smaller project, but a very exciting project because the evaluation that we saw of that project was certainly increasing student satisfaction greatly. The other thing that I've been involved in and that I led was the implementation of interprofessional simulation education for the maternal child nursing program. So to tell you a little bit about, we actually have four simulation interprofessional scenarios that are run. Two of them that focus on pediatrics and two of them that focus on maternal child. And I worked with my wonderful colleague Marion, who is here today, who is wonderful from a knowledge base within interprofessional and simulation. And what we tried to do then is collaborate with getting our medical friends on board because we wanted to make those interprofessional and have the students and the clerks, residents, working together within that environment. OB took off like that. OB was absolutely amazing. PEDS was a little slower. It's now been, I think we're into our third year of having the simulation in place, and we now have 100% PEDS buy-in from the medical perspective. So we got there, it just took us a little bit longer from that perspective. Our medical colleagues have been wonderful. We were able to get together, we were able to critique, are we still meeting the needs of students related to the content that is in the simulations. So to give you an idea, within OB we do a normal badge delivery. They go off and they debrief, and then they're interrupted within their debriefing because their patient is then having a postpartum hemorrhage, and they have to come back and continue on with that patient. So they don't know that directly they're going to be interrupted. They know it's a normal badge delivery and a postpartum hemorrhage, but what gets them is the continuity of care that flows through, that we interrupt them to say, a nurse comes in and says, I'm concerned, this is what's happening with the patient, I need you guys all back here now to assess the patient. And they like that aspect, because even though we're debriefing, we take them right back, and away we go back into that simulation session. Within pediatrics, we do do two separate scenarios. We do one that is based on an asthmatic, so an asthma that has an exacerbation. And then we also have an appendicitis who is back from surgery and then goes septic. So the way that the mannequins change is that the students have to critically think, they have to communicate, and they have to be able to talk back and forth. Our patients certainly can get sicker, and if they don't pick up on the right things, the patients don't get better within the simulation. And they certainly seem to be more comfortable within the second simulation because they know what to expect of each other within that working environment. They get to know each other, and they get to know, okay, who's going to take the lead on this, right? Who's going to do this? And they just communicate better. The feedback related to those simulation sessions have been nothing but positive. Students have actually, even this semester, been emailing me related to how effective they feel. Especially if they've just had a patient within the clinical setting, the same thing has happened, and they come into this environment, and it solidifies their information. So again, positive feedback related to that. The development and implementation of third-year nursing courses. So working along with my very knowledgeable director, we did find that we had three courses prior to two larger courses being amalgamated. And what I did is I tried to lead the redevelopment of these third-year nursing courses to try and increase their clinical hours because of evidence that we had seen that perhaps not enough focus was being given from a pediatric and an OB perspective. And we really wanted to address that. We're one of the few universities who still offer both maternity and pediatrics within our curriculum. And we stand by and value that, and we wanted to continue to make that an important aspect. And so what we did is we redeveloped, we really refocused, we went back to the table and we talked about what is important, what is it that we need to focus on, and we revamped those third year courses to trying to be able to really meet the needs of what we were seeing after students wrote their RN exams and what we were seeing within our curriculum in general. And I'm happy to say that we've done a great job. We've still tweaked things as we've gone along based on student feedback. But we have increased clinical hours. The students certainly seem satisfied and happy with the hours that they are getting and the experiences that they are getting as well. And then the most recent that I've been involved in is the development of a remedial process for clinical courses. And I've worked alongside with two colleagues within the School of Nursing as well with this. And sometimes what we find is that there's a really big step between what we expect of students within second year of clinical and third year of clinical. And so we've had some issues whereby we wanted to see, is there a gap in there that we can try and bridge? Is there something in there that we could offer to students who perhaps are struggling in second year, haven't failed the course, but are struggling within second year that would better prepare them for what they're going to see within third year? And this past spring, we trialed it. So what happened is that a student who may have been on a learning plan and wasn't successful normally within Nursing 207 was given an opportunity to provide an extra 96 hours of clinical related to that second year nursing course. And then we evaluated what had happened. So there were 8 students who participated in that. 4 of the students ended up passing. 2 students did end up failing after that remedial. And 1 student ended withdrawing, deciding that nursing was not for her. And we really found that that was a success because what we're currently seeing right now within our third year, and we're still very preliminary with this, is that we don't have as many students on learning plans. We don't have as many students struggling as what we've had in the past. Now, certainly, is it 100% dependent on the remedial? We don't know. It could be the students in themselves. But we feel that we're providing an extra opportunity for those students who are struggling within that second year course before we really step it up within third year. And so that's something that we're going to reevaluate and potentially look at providing again within the spring of next year to those students as well. Okay, so I think the use of clickers in my course will strengthen the reinforcement of the topic that is being discussed. Strongly agree, agree, disagree, or strongly disagree. So I'm just trying to show you the variety of questions that you can provide to your students within clickers. And again, this would just be obviously based on what you guys think. And of course, as you know, I'm a bit biased because I love them. Just to recap just quickly, so effective teaching, is there such a thing? certainly we could just start to generate a discussion amongst all of us. Certainly that depends on the environment that you're in. That depends on your audience. That depends on how receptive your students are. I think all of us know that we have students in the back, and I'm not sure how many they think they're fooling, that are still on Facebook, right? The laptop is up. I can see them smiling. I can see them typing. Nobody else is writing anything down. I wasn't born yesterday. Provided they're not disrupting class, I don't commonly say something, but if I find they're disrupting class, then I'm happy to address it. So, are we effectively teaching? A lot of that certainly depends on our learners as well, right? I guess the biggest thing that I can say is that the methods that I have found, certainly with the feedback that I get, is I feel that I'm able to engage my learners. Some of the comments that they have been able to provide to me via USATS, that we have been able to see that I am doing something right. I'm certainly not perfect, but the majority of students that take the time to fill out USATS and provide comments have been able to provide me with some feedback that has allowed me not only to strengthen what I'm doing, but to maybe look at and change what I'm doing as well. There are still students who tell me, and I do have a habit of talking too fast. That's probably my biggest critique, and that's me and something I personally have to work on because I do talk too fast. So I'm not sure I can answer the question, effective teaching, is there such a thing? Because there's so many different ways that we could measure that outcome. But I guess working together, trying to share the knowledge of things that I have found that have worked well, and I'd love to hear things that you have found that have worked well that possibly I could adopt as well, because I'm always looking at ways to succeed and to get better. And having said that, one of the things that I am doing to try and again get better with the support of my director is taking an intense course up in Toronto starting in January, which is a nurse educator certificate program. And so I'm extremely excited about that. It's just another avenue whereby I'm able to take a focus and look to see what else can I do to strengthen the teaching that I am actually doing. I realize I'm short on time. I'm just going to skip through. I know you're all disappointed. I'm just going to skip through the clicker question here. I just want to take you in and just, even if we don't have time to play it, I would just like to show you the Jeopardy that I do. So there are lots of different templates. Have any of you used Jeopardy within your classrooms? So there's lots of different templates that you can find. There's some that have music, right, go right down to the nitty-gritty. I personally find that sometimes the music is a bit distracting, so I personally choose the ones without music, but that is just my choice. So again, what I would do, you can make it as many or as little questions as you want. You can throw fun things in. You can see I have who am I based on what I've talked about, teaching philosophy based what I've talked about. I've given us an animal category, and then I've given us a pediatric category. So you can pretty much make it anything that you want. And then very easily what you can do is you can divide up groups. So the rows that I can see, right, I would quickly divide you into three different groups. And then working together, I would just go ahead and I would say, go ahead and you can pick a question. Which question would you like?
For real. teaching philosophy.
For how much money?
Sorry. Let's go for four.
Oh, she's going big. So then coming down and clicking on it. So for $400 in teaching philosophy, challenged with questions and situations. So now all of you can work together and you can come up with what you think the answer might be, or the questions would be. So these ones are harder because it directly relates to what I talked about. How does Lori critically analyze the problem-solving techniques used by students? I would give you that one. Actually, then I would come back. Then I would come back and I would go to home. I would allow my next group to then go ahead and choose. Sheila, go ahead and choose a category and the amount.
I'm so timid in games, so I'm going to pick who am I for 200.
Excellent. And then again, certification in oncology nursing. So anyone within her team, you're more than welcome to answer the question. And if you don't get it right, the other teams are allowed to jump in.
Who is Lori?
Okay, absolutely yes. What is Lori's certification in nursing?
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, let's go on to our, we'll give every team a chance here. Let's go on to our third team. Kevin, which one would you like?
Oh, let's try animals.
Which amount?
300.
The energy source of most food chains. I went with more difficult animal questions. It's mm-hmm. not just what says roof roof.
I know it. What is
what is the sunlight? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Good job. Mm-hmm. So I'm aware of the time. If you want to play for, and you can have a final Jeopardy question when you come up to the final Jeopardy. Yes.
So I have a question. When I first started doing active learning, I tried some games like this, and it was a huge disaster.
Really?
Yes. And the reason was, and this is just my caveat to this, that the students I was teaching found this insulting.
Really? Okay.
Yes. And it was very surprising to me because I've gone to workshops, I've read the literature on this. So I just would say know your audience here. Another situation whereby I wanted at one point to randomize something, and I handed out cards to randomize. Now, I had very little kids at the time, so I picked up kids' cards. That's yep. what I had at home. Again, students were insulted. So there's a very interesting balance here, and that would be my caution in using games.
Yep, and that is great feedback, and that's part of where I like to know my audience as well, right? I like to get to know my learners. So when we first came in, I actually get the students within our class. They have to tell me one thing unique about themselves with their name when we go around the room, and that helps me to kind of engage, and I can also hear the diversity as well. Not that that tells me I know my audience right off the bat, but absolutely. Your audience in particular was who?
Medical students.
Medical students, okay.
And I actually think the first year piece is very important because they're just figuring out who they are.
Yes.
And I actually think a second year class or a third year class who have developed more trust in their teachers might have been more relaxed.
Right.
But here we have a first year class who was desperate to learn something about medicine and just didn't get the sorts of, I played bingo and
yes.
all sorts of things. And I must admit, I abandoned all that stuff because of it. In adopting more of what you talked about, case-based and very authentic, because what I found with the learners that I teach, they respond to authenticity, things that put them in the shoes of the roles they're going to be.
Right.
So my personal direction has been to go more that way. Again, I think once you have the trust of your audience, and for someone coming to this and saying, oh, I'm going to do that, you've got to have that context.
And I think that's extremely important.
Flat, it's really hard as a teacher.
Yes. Yeah, no, absolutely. The one thing I want to say, too, about Jeopardy is it's time-consuming. The clicker questions in particular, I find I can throw things in, or the case-based studies can be time-consuming, but it is very, very relevant. Jeopardy is time-consuming, so you do need to set up a certain amount of time that you're going to give if you want to try that aspect in itself. Yes?
I just wonder what your class size
is. So my class size varies. In the fall, it's smaller, which I love much better, which is around about 40 students. In the wintertime, it goes up to about 80. Okay. Yeah.
And you would still use all of these?
I do. Yes, I do. Yeah.
And I just have a quick comment. We have just, in the past 2 years, had our medical students purchase licenses for JournalPoint rather than hard copy clickers. And that opens up a lot of potential. Because what students do is they answer using, they can use a computer, a tablet, or a smartphone, and they can give you narrative responses. And so you can ask an open-ended question and you can type it in.
Wow.
I've used that in the context of team-based learning, where what I'll say is for each of my 15 teams, I have 7 students in each, I'll ask a particular question, what do you think is the etiology of this, or whatever. And then I'll ask one student in the team to type in the team answer preceded by their team number. So then I get a spreadsheet that comes up that says team 4 says it's vascular and team 2. And so that's really nice because you're not prompting them as you always are. And so I would encourage you to get access to that. Mm-hmm. The pricing is not bad. I can't remember what it is. It's under $50.
It's 35, I think.
Yeah.
35?
How long does the license last?
I don't know that actually.
4 years.
It's 4 years. If it does a three-year course.
You can get, this is called Turning Point Anywhere, and MedTech will help you with this.
And the nice thing about it is you can do it on the fly. So you don't have to build it into your presentation.
Right.
You
yes.
can pull up a window. You could put a website or something up and pull up a window and just do yes, no, or 86. And again, I'm not as nimble with it because I teach my course once a year, so I only get to use it once a year. But the more we do it, and I think the more we start, I really love what you talked about using the beginning of the class to reinforce what you're talking for. Mm-hmm. I think if we all did that yeah. consistently, it would be great.
Yeah, mm-hmm. thank you.
The cheap way of doing the exact same thing, the next simple slide for MedTech, is to have the learning teams just open up the learning event for the day and submit a discussion answer. And it all comes up.
I see, right.
Teaching. So I'll just bring up the learning event and just refresh as the teams respond to that again.
Right.
And then we'll look at together what we learned.
And do you find all of your students are coming with laptops? To class?
Well, they're in learning teams.
So someone has, right, so one person just, okay.
Yes. There's more than enough laptops.
Yeah, yes, that there would be in those cases. I still know not everyone has one within nursing, but.
The same thing, we already have it, but we need to deliver.
Right, yes, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a great idea. Because sometimes, like you say, it's the prompting. I'd love them to be able to critically think about it without my prompting, right? Just even and whether I give them answers, whether I give them it's a true or false, either way, I'm still prompting them on what it is that we're speaking about. So that's a great idea.
But, you know, the license is so cheap, really. I think there's something to be said for rolling it into an expectation for students to get. Now, of course, then you need enough faculty to use it so the students feel justified. And I don't know that we're quite there yet in this. But
right.
as people start to see the possibilities, I think it would be great.
So would every student buy it?
Yeah,
yes.
But it would be what you would classify as something
yeah,
that
a
would, it's a mandatory. Okay. Okay.
Yes.
For that tips
learner,
is that something that's offered?
It's in April. Yes, it's in April, and it comes out of the Office of Faculty Development with Danielle Blouin, and so she will be sending an announcement around. She's already sent out a call for tutors and facilitators, and it's usually in April, and it's for residents, faculty, TAs, anyone who's interested in learning some theory and some practical. There's a great practical session where you do micro-teach, mm-hmm. Where each of the participants does a micro-teach and is videotaped and then watches themselves. And I hope that doesn't sound intimidating. It actually works out really, really well.
It does.
When
and
we do it.
Because it is intimidating. Like when you go in and go, oh my gosh, this is what I have to do, right? I don't know these people. All of a sudden I'm creating objectives in a short presentation that I have to stand up. But what you learn from it and the reinforcement of it was beyond anything I can even express. It really solidified things for me in particular. It was hard. It was 2 days.
It was a
2-day intensive. But the act of participation, you just weren't gathering information and going and then wondering, am I doing this correctly? Because you got direct feedback within the 2 days that you were there.
So Dr. Wee is one of our tutors. I'm looking around. Lindsay, have you heard? You
know
years
of
tutoring. Yeah.
I'd also put a plug in for the Push to Find workshop coming up. It's really at the Center for Teaching and Learning. I think it's in December. It's on their website.
And
it's an excellent workshop. If you are taking over a course or remodeling a course, it's about a 2.5 to 3-day commitment, but it's excellent. I facilitate it. It's a course design workshop through the Center for Teaching and Learning. If you're not on their email list, you need to get on it. They get a newsletter once a week. Just go to their website or give them a call. That I can't see.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you for listening, and I hope you've been able to take something away from this morning.
Just before you leave, two things. I've been asked to remind you to complete the evaluation survey, and I'd like to thank Lori. When she started off, She talked to us about asking thought-provoking questions to encourage thoughtful reflection. And I think she's done a very good job of that. We've also been privileged to see how, in creating an environment where people feel safe, lots of great ideas have come out just towards the end. I think Laurie has answered the question for us, is there such a thing as effective teaching? Uh-huh. And I think we've seen some great examples today. So please join me in thanking Laurie for her talk today. Don't forget these, and if you wish to... And there was a sign-up sheet going around for certain credits.
I'll just put them.
She took mine. I know, Jenny, boy, you can't afford to lose these, eh? I know. Oh, thank you so much. I haven't done mine.
Thank you.